This is Maine Currents, independent local news, views, and culture. I'm Amy Brown, and recently I had an opportunity to speak with some of the folks from the U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities organizations as they were on a speaking tour here in Maine. We touched a bit on the history of sistering relationships that go back to the Civil War in El Salvador, but mostly looked at what's happening today and how there are parallels between what's happening in El Salvador and in the U.S.
I'm Karen Volkhausen. I'm the president of the board of PICA and a longtime member of Sister Cities, and I live in Orland, Maine.
I'm John Falk. I'm a longtime member of PICA, along with Karen, well, since the beginning of PICA, or actually before the beginning of PICA, and very active in the National Sister Cities Network, and I live in Carmel.
Hello, this is Zulma Tovar. I'm calling from El Salvador, in the main city, San Salvador. I'm the co-coordinator of U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities in El Salvador's office, of course, and I'm happy to be here with you all.
Hello, my name is Kelly Calles, and I'm the co-coordinator for U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities, and I'm based in El Salvador, same as Zulma.
Thank you all for joining us today and taking time to do this. In the very early 90s, when I returned to Maine, I grew up here, but I lived out of state for a while and I came back. I was surprised to see how many ties Maine had, even at that time, with El Salvador. There was POSICA in Portland, where, I think it was Portlanders Against U.S. in El Salvador or something like that. So there, the ties go way back. And I know you all were involved, a lot of the folks who were behind PICA and the original people in the country in El Salvador, they got together. That all started happening around the time of the war. People were there doing accompaniment during the war. So, Karen, do you want to start with some history, build on that, and how those things got started?
Yeah, I can talk about the origins of PICA, even though I wasn't a member of PICA then. I knew about them. It really was the early 80s, and because of the wars in Central America that our government was supporting the wrong side, the dictators there, there was a huge outcry here. I mean, just protests popped up all over the place. And in Bangor, and I have to read it, there was a group called Bangor Area Central America Solidarity Committee. And I went to one of their workshops, actually. It was fantastic, but they hung on there for probably, 5 years. And then I wasn't there, but I think it morphed into PICA. PICA became a more structured organization. They did the same kind of work, but the more structured organization and had an organizer, and they carried on really good work. And then in 1991, they joined the U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities Network and linked up with, as we know, that network linked communities in El Salvador with communities in the States. And so the war wasn't quite over, but that's what was happening. And I jumped on board in 1992. So our sister city project has just, with Carrasque in El Salvador, has just been the most amazing things in our lives. I just can't tell you how beautiful the relationship is. And it clicked. We clicked together as two communities really fast. They didn't look on us as people were giving them money. We didn't look on them as, oh, we got to go help those poor people and tell them what to do. It was not that kind of relationship at all. And they changed my life. I think they changed all our lives on the committee by going there and meeting them and so forth. We so admired all their skills. They had so much courage. They had so much persistence. They had so much hope. They're brilliant organizers. They're brilliant. And they taught us all about that. And we have continued this tight relationship since, for 34 years. And we're still in it. And I feel we'll be in it as long as we can be in anything. You know, life doesn't go on forever. So, and we are older. I mean, the committees and the network tend to be older people now. So,
When you talk about deep connections, there's even been one marriage that I know of among folks who families here and family there, a daughter, you know. So, I mean, there really have been like close personal connections and ties made. I think you started, you picked up some Spanish too in your travels. If I remember correctly, when we went, you were, aren't you
you
able
thought
to
I was
speak
pretty
Spanish a
good?
little bit? Well, anybody's better than me. I'm terrible because I mix it up with French and then nobody understands me.
Yeah, I really did pick up Spanish. Some. I wasn't great at it, but I picked it up, and I went to El Salvador as a volunteer several times for a couple months and was able to survive. Just great. People generally learn to understand me. And I understood less, actually, unfortunately. So, yeah, connections are deep. And they have had delegations up here, several, which have been lots of fun.
Yeah, we had folks join us at a radio conference, excuse me, in Lowell, Mass a few years back, and went to a baseball game and stuff together. So it definitely is a lot of fun and made some good friends. And despite the language barriers, one friend and I were able to communicate fairly well about our desire to go to the thrift shop. Special terms and signals and stuff that we use to try to communicate because my Spanish is so bad. But anyway, John, I think you were, if anybody, do you have anything else to add to that, Karen, or does anybody?
I may.
Pardon?
My brain kind of went off.
Oh, jump in anytime.
And
don't
I don't have
about
notes or many notes.
Yeah, that's fine. Just jump in anytime. I think, John, you were going to talk a little bit about some of the political parallels or how the two countries have interacted politically historically.
Yeah, I just want to kind of set the stage for Sulman and Kelly. First of all, ditto to everything Karen said. For a lot of us, being part of this relationship is life-changing. And it spills over to all kinds of other parts of our lives. But right now, I think there's a lot of similarities between what's going on in El Salvador and what's going on here in the United States. Basically, El Salvador is further along than we are on the downward path from democracy to authoritarianism. But I really don't think we're that far behind right now. Both of our countries or governments are engaging what I would call acts of performative repression that's designed to instill fear and create compliance in the populations. And I've been thinking a lot about a story that I'm sure that many ERU listeners are familiar with, which is that on September 18th, 1787, which was the last day of the Continental Convention in Philadelphia, at which our U.S. Constitution was drafted, a woman named Elizabeth Willing Powell, who was a very well-connected and politically active person, asked Ben Franklin, one of the key delegates, Dr. Franklin, what have we got, a republic or a monarchy? And he said, republic, if we can keep it. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought that was, you know, Ben Franklin was a really funny, smart guy. And this is a clever phrase. But at some point this year, I finally got it that, wait a minute. This right now is what he's talking about. And this is the moment we're in. And if we want to keep our democracy and perfect as it is, there are times we need to really work and struggle as hard as we can for it. And right now, we need all hands on deck. And Karen talked about all we've learned from the Salvadorans, our Salvadoran partners. And how to do this is one of those things they can teach us. They have taught us, and they are teaching us. They've been in this fight a lot longer than we have. And they're in it very much right now for their own country. So we're supporting each other as brothers and sisters in a shared struggle. We're helping each other. And we have different ways we can help. They have more of some things than we do. We have more of some other things than they do. And so that's just kind of a lead in for Sulman Kelly to begin sharing a little bit what's going on now. And I would kind of like it if they started by talking about Secot, which is the new mega super prison that Salvadoran President Bukele built for the purpose of mass incarceration. And if you've been following the news, our own government is also using Secot to detain people who were deported, including people who are in Salvador who never ever been to El Salvador.
And that wasn't built for the U.S., although the friendship between the Salvadoran president and the U.S. president has made that happen. So there clearly were plans for it beforehand. And what we were hearing here beforehand was that the activists that we had seen, we were talking before we came on about the town's passing anti-mining laws. The last time I was there, we were election observers in a town that was passing an anti-mining law because there's very little fresh water and what's there needs to be protected. And so there were a lot of successes. And then word was getting out about government crackdown there on activists. So yeah, pick up from there. What was happening with that and what was CECOT for? Was that going to be this president's way of rounding up everybody? Anybody that they called a gang member they could just throw in there? How did that work?
Yeah, so the CECOT stands for Terrorism Confinement Center. And initially, well, it was built opened in 2023, supposedly to send criminals to that prison. And that, let's say that's the brand of the president of the current government of El Salvador saying that we feel proud of having the largest prison in Central or in America. And it was in the context of the state of exception that was applied supposedly only for a couple of days back in 2022 for gang members. But now it's 2025 and the state of exception is not at exception anymore. So the CECOT for many or for the vast majority of Salvadorans is a symbol of repression. Is a symbol of intimidation because the state of exception and CECOT are still being used in order to silence the voices that are critical to the corruption that is happening, to the violations of human rights that are happening right now. So besides all of this, the repression that people are facing here in El Salvador, voices that are being silenced, also, there are some repercussions on the communities around this mega prison related to environmental issues that they are facing due to sewage water and many other problems that those communities are facing. Besides that, you know, like El Salvador suffered a civil war, as we heard earlier, and it was because people didn't have access to land. Then back early 1992, when the peace accords were signed, families got land. But nowadays, what we are seeing is eviction from the government. Many families are being evicted from their land to build mega projects such as the CECOT, and also other development that are happening supposedly for tourists. So, we have seen and we are facing human rights violations, but voices are being silenced, as I said, and they are being saying, okay, if you speak, if you speak up, or if you denounce what's happening, you know, tortures that are happening within prisons here in El Salvador. So if you say something on social media or everywhere you go, people will tag you as if you are related to a criminal. And then police can take or go to your home and take you to a prison because of the state of exception. So so that's related to the CECOT, how we are seeing this mega prison. And now we have seen also that migrants from the United States have been sent to El Salvador to be in the prison. And we all knew about what happened with the Venezuelans here in El Salvador. But also, we know stories of Salvadorans that were deported back to El Salvador, sent to the CECOT, but the relatives know anything about that. So they are disappeared. And the state is not providing any response to those families as well.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Maine Currents, independent local news, views, and culture here on WERU-FM. I'm Amy Brown. This conversation was recorded on October 8th. And the folks that you're hearing from are in Maine and in El Salvador, and they're involved in sistering relationships between our two countries that date back decades. Thanks, Alma. Do you, or maybe Kelly wants to jump in? Can someone say a little bit about the state of exception, what that means?
The state of exception means that we don't have rights. And basically, the government can take everyone that it's just because if you look different, or because your clothes are different, or because you are using a certain type of shoes, they can say, okay, you are a GAD member, so you are going to go to the prison. And the law says that you can't have information about the person who is in the prison at least for 72 hours, but with the state of deception, you have to wait more than 15 days until you can ask for information about that person. So there are a lot of people that are detained, and they can ask the families, they can ask for information about them. They can ask about the cases, and because there is no information about them. And also the trials, we are having mass trials, more than 20 people in one single trial, and they don't have the due process that we used to have without the state of exception. Also, as Zulma said, the state of exception is a tool to intimidate the people, to intimidate the ones that are fighting for human rights. The human rights defenders, they are treating them as criminals, and they are saying they are just fighting for the criminals' rights, but that's not true. The human rights defenders, they are defending our rights, and it's not just about criminals. It's about all the violations that they are doing within the state of deception.
You know, hold on just a second. I just want to ask you, and maybe can weigh in on this on your answer, Zulma. And we have Olivia. We are welcoming. Do you want to introduce yourself real quick before we go into the next question? I'm glad you're able to make it.
Hi, I'm Olivia. I'm the U.S. grassroots organizer with U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities. It's nice to see you all.
We were talking about the state of exception and my rudimentary understanding of it. I just want to run this by you and see if I'm correct. And if I'm not, please do correct me. But the basics, as far as I understand it, is there was a gang problem in El Salvador, like there is in a lot of places, you know, mostly in the city, I understand. In order to fight that, that was made a crisis where the state of exception means basically an exception from your civil rights, an exception from your due process, all of those things, that's all suspended and they can do what they want to do and they operate under completely different rules. And the reason I'm really interested in this is because I see this as a blueprint that the president in the U.S. may be working on as well. So that's why I wanted to know more about that. Is that, have I missed part of that there? I know that's really basic.
Yeah, no, you're correct. The state of exception comes to El Salvador, or is applied in El Salvador in the context of fighting gang members in El Salvador. You know, that issue that came to El Salvador from the states, that those groups were forming the states, they were deported back to El Salvador. And that was a big problem for the vast majority of Salvadorans. And during the political campaign of the current president, he was saying, we are going to fight gang members. We are going to provide opportunities. We are going to shut down prisons in cities, and we are going to build new universities. We're going to have more opportunities for young people. But what happened, what we saw was repression, was profiling poor young people from poor neighborhoods, from rural communities. So what Kelly was saying is profiling, like military soldiers and police officers were detaining only young people that looked, you know, not like someone in a wealthy family or wealthy neighborhood here, but in impoverished communities. And So we haven't seen the construction of new universities with this government. We have seen just building prisons. Nowadays, they are saying that they are going to combat corruption, building another SECOT, another prison. So that's the context. That's how also the state of exception, excuse me, allowed the government to militarize communities, to militarize the cities. So right now we are seeing that the national budget for security has been decreased because they are increasing the budget for defense. That means decreasing the budget for police, national police, and increasing the budget for the military forces. That also, we are seeing also that the budget for the Ministry of Education and for Health also has been trimmed in order to increase militarization in our communities.
Lots of heads nodding. Does anybody want to add anything to that? I mean, it's really sobering to think about. Olivia, yeah, jump in anytime. And Karen's back with us too. So Karen, if you want to jump in at any point, we were talking about the state
of exception. Sorry, I missed it. The internet went out. We had to get a hotspot. So I'm hotspotted.
All right, cool. Glad you're back.
Thank you.
I think exactly what you said, Amy, of this providing a blueprint for the United States, and what Zulma was sharing reminded me of the Supreme Court allowing racial profiling for immigration enforcement in mid-September in LA. So now people can be racially profiled for immigration enforcement. And we're seeing the mass incarceration of primarily Latine people in LA. And then they will be deported, and that can even be a death sentence for people who are being deported to their countries. The UN has reported three disappearances of Salvadoran people who have been deported in the last.
Not to mention all the kids that nobody, they just separate them from their parents like their luggage or something, and then nobody can find them later. I know after the war, there was a process that went on for a while using DNA to try to reunite some of the families that were separated during the war. And it seems like if there's ever sanity again in the world, that that'll be a process that will have to happen again to reunite families. But by then, the damage is done.
Yeah.
John, yeah, jump in.
In addition to what Livy was saying, another thing that really is striking is the parallel in militarization. The militarization of sort of everyday life, where we have the National Guard being sent to pacify places which are perfectly peaceful. We have Trump talking about using regular army troops rather than practice in American cities. It's all very chilling, and we can kind of see it is the same blueprint. And even without a formal state of exception, our government is doing things like that.
And building fear. Is that something that's happening there as well? I mean, they started this whole crazy story about immigrant families were eating pets somewhere in the Midwest. And despite even the mayor of that town, you know, notifying them, no, that's not happening. Please stop. We're getting death threats and crazy things are happening here now. The people who wanted to believe it clung to that. Are they using that type of propaganda or scare tactic there as well?
Yeah, for example, we have seen the case of environmentalists. You were talking, Amy, about the struggle that Salvadoran communities had against metallic mining in El Salvador. And we had a victory. The people of El Salvador had a victory in 2017 in which the government passed a law to ban metallic mining in El Salvador. However, this current government override that law. And with that, five environmentalists that were very involved in the mining struggle were detained. They were accused of being related to war crimes. But we all know that was something that was related to the law that was just override, because there are intentions, there are attempts to bring a metallic mining exploration or exploitation here in El Salvador. There are some also community members from those communities in cabañas as well, that they are seeing the presence of military forces and heavy machinery there and vehicles there that are perhaps already doing any type of mining work in the community. So we see that the state of exception also is being used to intimidate people that are, you know, that want to be organized, that want to go to the streets and do any type of protest against, as I said earlier, development or huge or mega projects that are doing or taking the land of the people. Yeah, so that can be one case.
Thank you so much for giving us this space to share a little bit about our reality, because we know that right now in El Salvador, we are facing a miscommunication case because they don't want us to say this kind of things. They don't want us to be informed about the situation. And that is something that we have to keep working on and try to share our voices outside of the country where the people can share their reality and that can change the mind of the people, and they are not going to see El Salvador as the wonderful or beautiful country that they are selling, because it's not like that. So, and I believe Olivia to share more information about how you can be involved with Sister Cities. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Kelly. And that was sort of the last word from you all, was about you're leading by example. You're being told not to speak out about this, but you're doing it anyway. And that's actual courage. Mm-hmm. Olivia, do you want to wrap things up with contact information and so forth?
Yeah, thank you all so much for attending and watching, listening. If you're interested in getting involved with our organization, you can contact us via our website at www.elsalvadorsolidarity.org. You can also follow us on Instagram at US El Salvador Sister Cities. Thank you.
That conversation was recorded in October of 2025 before news broke of Marco Rubio offering to exchange information about informants to sweeten the deal for being able to send prisoners to El Salvador from the U.S. The website again is elsalvadorsolidarity.org if you'd like to know more about sistering relationships. This has been Maine Currents, an independent local news, views, and culture program that airs as a pop-up show these days. I'm Amy Brown. Thanks for listening.